So we're good to go whenever you are, Adid.
Hello. Welcome. Again.
These intros welcome. Keep getting worse.
Yeah, I don't know. I never think about what I'm going to say, and then I took a shower right before this, and it's the first time I was ever like, how do I usually start an episode? And I just didn't remember, so I didn't know what I was going to do.
Hello, every... Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, we sound like we're reverting back to, like, the first season at the movies.
Hi, thanks for listening to the, podcast.
Here's a Wikipedia synopsis of what happened in Scanners.
Speaking about movies, what do we watch this week on... Oh, guess what? It's just after the movies now, Aaron. Isn't that crazy?
Just after the movies. And the cool part about that is that we still watch two movies a week.
Mm-hmm.
If you're tuning in today, you're going to hear about John Carpenter's Christine. It's our third film from the director for the season. And if you tune in on Thursday, you're going to hear us talk about the newest Paranormal Activity film, Paranormal Activity Next of Kin, which Jimmy was so excited for. He couldn't wait.
I hate those movies, so you're going to make sure you buckle yourself in for this one on Thursday.
Going to be interesting. We haven't talked about it before the show, so I actually have no idea what he thought about it. So tune in for that. And next week we'll be shuffling back to Kubrick. I think we're doing Clockwork Orange. And mm-hmm. I'll have to check the schedule to see what After the Movies is, but we'll mention it on the next podcast.
Yep.
As we said, today is Christine Day on the pod.
Yep.
And
not to be confused with the TV show Christine. So if you guys watch that, that won't be what we're talking about today. We talked about the evil car Christine.
What is the TV show Christine?
I don't know, but it was when I was searching for this on streaming. It was like, do you mean the TV show? And I was like, no.
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 There's also a film from 2016, I think, called Christine that's about the news anchor, Christine Chubbuck, that shot herself on live television, which is a very good film. Definitely super dark.
That's not what that's not what we're covering.
Oops. Watch the wrong. Was Christine a car in your movie, or was it a woman? That's a good way to tell if you watch the right Christine. Or a car that's treated like a woman, mm-hmm. as is the case with John Carpenter's Christine. So the first question I had for you because we covered this movie, to me, reminded me a lot of The Dead Zone, the Cronenberg movie with Christopher Walken that we covered. It was also a Stephen King story.
It did.
And, I wanted to ask you, have you read any Stephen King, or do you remember reading any Stephen mm-hmm. King, like, growing up or anything?
Yeah, I was my mom was a big Stephen King fan, so definitely I'm pretty well versed in the Stephen King lore and realm of things, so.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I don't do well with books that don't have pictures. And, it's all right. I did, you know, Stephen King's books are like notoriously very long. And what I found out was that I loved his short stories, because you knock out a short story in a day, it'd be like, you know, 20, 25 pages, mm-hmm. relatively quick read. And it kind of got to the point and did its thing. So I've not read Christine.
I haven't either.
But I have. Read short stories by Stephen King.
The whole time I thought this was the first Stephen King film that we've done on our podcast, and turns out I was wrong.
Indeed, you were, my friend. To be fair, it actually might be, because I have to check, but The Dead Zone might have been written under the name he went by before Stephen King, his pen name, which was like Richard Bachman, something like that.
Weird. You would think you would go with your real name that sounds like a fake name over Richard Bachman, but hey, you know, you do you, Steven.
You keep on keeping on, Steven. We love you. We love to see you. We love that you're around, like a comforting warm blanket of liberal politics on Twitter and HBO miniseries waiting to be adapted. Thank you for all that you do. Anyways, this felt like to me, so this is what the whole reason I asked you, because, and I don't know, okay, sorry, one more question before we get there. Do you know if you've seen any John Carpenter movies aside from Halloween prior to this podcast?
Yeah, I have. I've seen Prince of Darkness. I was looking at him the other day because I was talking to Bert about the movies that Carpenter did because I was talking about the podcast, and I remember there's a couple that I've seen. I'd have to look.
So he's like a genre filmmaker, mm-hmm. you know, and his movies have this very distinct style to them. Music, obviously, he does a lot of the music for his own movies, The Thing notably being an exception, but this, and then he's got his own font too, the John Carpenter font that he uses in every at the beginning of Halloween and the Thing. All these movies has the same like bold font, the John Carpenter font. But so this is what I want. This is the whole reason I brought all of this up. Similar to The Dead Zone, which was a Cronenberg movie, that didn't feel like a Cronenberg movie to me.
Mm.
This kind of feels more like a Stephen King movie adaptation than it does a John Carpenter film.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
You can tell he didn't write the script, you know? It doesn't feel like John Carpenter would write this kind of like 50s throwback, even though it's during the 70s. It's got this like 50s greaser thing going on.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I thought I saw this movie before, but I don't think I did. There were bits and pieces that I thought were familiar, but I think I might have just been getting them confused with a different film. But I was like, it was like really cool, I guess. Like, I like these like greaser films. I really liked Grease and stuff like that. So like seeing these guys and he's like, I'm going to get you, Hardy. I'm going to get you. He's like, you're a dad. It's like, you just love like schools like that where you just were like threatened to kill another student in front of a teacher. And he's like, I'll see you in the office.
That's exactly what I said to Jess. He's like, I'm to your pockets or I'll call the cops. And then when he did threaten a student and he pulls out his knife, the guy just goes like, go to the office. And I was like, you should still call the cops. he almost killed that guy. Like, it's just crazy. I do love the music that they use for this is awesome. Like when the car turns on and it's like kind of giving hints at how it's feeling through the music that's playing.
Dude, I loved, I just loved hearing Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood in this. That was nice. I was like, hell yeah.
Great way to open and close the movie.
Well, it's interesting because like, and I could be wrong. I don't think it was, no, because I think that song came out in the 60s. I'm mistaken, but when I looked up the soundtrack for this film, it was the first one. It was done by, like it made it seem like he made it for this film, but I don't think that's the case. I'd have to look that up, but this isn't a music podcast, yeah. So I wasn't going to look it up beforehand.
That's
so.
Okay. No. The music is just a part of it. And the other side of the music is John Carpenter does the score for this. And you can notice, you can hear the synths whenever mm-hmm. like Christine's chasing somebody down. So before we get any further, I'm going to say it's safe to say that did you enjoy this film?
I loved it, man. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was really cool. Like everything looked so nice and crisp and the shots were cool. And it was like, you know, it obviously like you got to give the dialogue a little break because this movie was filmed a while ago. So certain lines
rough around the edges,
certain things, you got to give it a pass because it was 40 years ago. So you give it a pass, but I loved it, man. I loved the whole like killer car thing. I thought that was neat. It's neat to see.
Like, isn't it crazy that what I was thinking was like in the hands of a less talented director, I think that the killer car thing could be, I think it's a great concept that could be like potentially not scary when not handled by the right director, or not creepy, I should say, because it's not really a super scary movie, but I think it manages to be creepy and the tone mm-hmm. and the atmosphere is pretty good.
Especially like in the one like towards the end there when Christine's front end gets smashed and it has like the teeth. That was pretty cool. That was like, that gives you that little like fear moment in there. And I think that you're right though, in the hands of a less competent director, this could have easily been like just pure camp almost.
Yeah, you know? Corny. I really think like, so like I said, I think it feels more like a Stephen King adaptation, but the times that Carpenter does kind of shine through, there was a couple moments I noticed. The big one, and my favorite scene, I think, in the film is the drive-in sequence where he's at the drive-in with his girlfriend and she, like, has a fit about the car. You know, you treat this car better than you treat me, and she doesn't want to spend time with him anymore, and he kind of lures her back into the car, and then he gets out because the windshield gets stuck, and as he's outside, the car turns on, and this, like, the visual is just so good, and that's really what John Carpenter does well, is, like, visuals, but the car lights up inside.
Yeah, it almost looks like she's in, like, a tanning booth. It was so weird, like, when it's raining outside, yeah. And then that's so lit up. Yeah.
There's, like, there's not a huge, like, an explanation for it, but the image is so good. It's, like, it's really, really creepy, and she's, like, choking, and the car is taunting her and playing the music, and then it locks its door so he can't open the door to get her. I thought that scene was awesome, and then I also, the other thing that felt very John Carpenter to me was just the coolest image from this whole movie for me was Christine on fire. She's chasing down the bullies, and
That was my favorite scene.
Yeah. She rams the bully's car, and then she ends up, like, destroying herself, and I forget how exactly she catches on fire.
Well, she rams into that, like, auto body shop, and it punctures the gas tank of of that other car that's on the lift. And the one thing that I remember is, like, so the one bully gets smashed against the car, and then the mechanic or owner of it just looks over and is like, "What?" And then, like, like, the whole thing's on fire, and Christine's rolling down the road on fire, and then the body just goes thump, 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 like, still on fire out of the car. And I was like, just the fact that you pulled that scene off from start to finish is cool to me. Like, that was so cool.
For sure. And it ends with, I mean, the visual is so good. The back and forth, it's like the camera comes up on the bully running down the road, and you can kind of see the illumination, like, start to come up on him, like, against his leather jacket. And then it's just a shot of a flaming car, like, just running him down. It's so good. And that is just such a distinctive image in this movie that, again, another director probably wouldn't have come up with or been able to pull off, you know?
Mm. What do you think of Arnie's transformation, though? Like, what was, like, from, like, being, like, the nerdy guy getting smashed in lockers to, like, alpha greaser in, like, 3 seconds?
I'll tell you what. It moves a little quick. I love it. First of all, that actor's performance, and let me pull up the name because I really want to do him justice. I did some research because I thought his performance was, like, excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I loved it. I thought he played nerd well, and then I thought he played villain, like, super well.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a character actor performance, just very distinct performance from him. So I looked up to see what else he was in, and he's been in a few things, but he actually did some screenwriting.
Yeah.
He wrote a couple of war dramas. His name is Heath Gordon.
And he did a couple episodes of Dexter and some TV shows as a director, so that was interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool to see him, like, see this guy that's so talented. As much as I kind of wish that he was in more, it's cool to see him branch out and know that. And, like, I was looking at the movies that he wrote, and they received very positive reviews. And so it seems like he's pretty skilled in a lot of ways. That's a thing where I think that if the performance wasn't so good, it maybe could be criticized as being, like you said, like, a little quick or just kind of, like, a little corny how quickly it turns over. But I actually think that the emotional component of this movie is surprisingly solid. When he explains to, I think it's his parents, it might be Dennis, but he has this it's Dennis. He has this explanation for why he cares about the car so much. He said it's because it's, like, the one thing that he finally has. He's like, you know, his parents are, like, giving him shit all the time. He's getting shit at school. And this car is finally the one thing that, like, nobody gets to tell him no about. Yep. He's just, like, taking this on as his personal project. It's his passion. And So, and it just happens to be that the car is also a killer-possessed vehicle that multiple people have died in. But those two things work really well together because it makes me believe there's a period of time during the movie where I didn't know, you know, until the reveal, when his boss gets killed, I didn't know if Arnie was in the car when it was killing people.
Yeah, that was kind of a big question that I had for the longest time. And even still, like, we get just as much of him in the car as it's killing as we do saying it's not. So I think you could really take it either way, because at the end he's in the car, you know, when he's going against, you know, his girlfriend and friend there. But also too, we see his boss call and he was like, Arnie dropped off the stuff, right? And it was like, yeah. And he was like, he was in my Cadillac, right? And you're like, yep. So it's like, you have it both ways. I mean, it could be, you're like, maybe he is in there, maybe he's not, but
I think it's super believable that he actually has, like, he has had such a, he calls people shitters the way that, like, Holden Caulfield and, oh my god, not To Catch a Mockingbird, good lord. What am I thinking of? I'm having a stroke here.
I don't know.
Good god, give me a minute. Oh, this is bad. To Kill a Mockingbird is what I was trying to say. Catcher in the Rye was the book I was thinking of. I said To Catch a Mockingbird. That is not even a book that exists. But he calls everyone phonies in his book, and he's got this holier-than-thou thing going on. And so I thought it was really funny that, like, Arnie literally becomes, like, on another plane of existence where everyone is below him, the point where he refers to anyone who is against him or Christine as a shitter, which I think is a very funny
term. I'm gonna start calling people shitters and be like, dude, that dude's
shitting everywhere, dude. I believed very much that, like, somebody who was getting that much shit from all directions would latch onto something so much they would care about it more than actual people.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you see it in real life all the time. There's people that don't socialize well that get super into a video game or super into a TV series, and they use that to kind of, and they use that as like a personality trait for themselves. Mm-hmm. So to me, it makes perfect sense that he would absolutely lose himself in the car.
Yeah.
No.
Also, too, I think that's part of the whole, like, mystique about this car is that I have a feeling, even though it's not touched on, but the previous owner, I think, was probably a lot like Arnie, like an outcast in his own right, found the car, and, you know, the car kind of senses that, and you become attached to it, you know? So, not only is the car possessed, but it possesses you, and you're kind of along for the ride with it, and I felt like the guy before was probably the same, because you talk about, like, his wife got killed and stuff like that. Like, nothing's going to come in between me and my car, and see the same
his
thing.
His wife, his daughter. Yeah. He just didn't care. And that's what makes it so cool, is that I think, you know, on paper, possessed car or demon car or whatever, sentient car, whatever you want to call it, is like a concept that some people would not find very creepy, frightening. I think the bigger idea at hand is that it's like a parasite, and it goes from, like, host to host, essentially, until that host is no longer there, and then it finds a new person to kind of leech onto, you know?
Well, and it makes me wonder, too, at the end, we see it, like, start to, like, you see it move, and I'm almost wondering, I was like, was that enough? Was that enough to take care of Christine, or is it going to just unfold itself from this block? Because we've seen it recover from, you know, just
that scene is all awesome.
Which one? The one where they're destroying it?
The scene where it rebuilds itself.
Oh, yeah.
Is, like, just awesome 80s, like, practical effects of this. Like, the kind of effects that I still don't know. You know, we watched The Thing, which I love. But I can look at a creature effect and kind of be like, oh, it's, you know, it's a monster. It's this, you know, made-up thing. And
But when they're shape-shifting the car, metal around, and you're like, how are you doing this?
It's literally one of those effects where I'm like, this was like 40 years ago and I have no idea how they did it. It looks so good.
Well, it's crazy too, because we as a viewer, it is kind of known, like we discover it along the road here, that Christine has the ability to rebuild herself, but we never see it. It just like destroyed and then it's like brand new, and we see that it has the but in that final, like, you know, in like that final act, just seeing it just get beat up and then it just like coming back and like fixing its front end and stuff, I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. But just like you said, I have no idea. I couldn't even begin to tell you how they even did that in the 80s.
No.
No idea.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that this movie is more about an antagonist than it is a protagonist. Which I think is like, even in horror movies, I don't think that's super common, because you might have somebody like Jason, who's kind of the primary guy, you know, in Friday the 13th, but then you also always have like a final girl or a survivor. And in this movie, you start out thinking that Dennis is going to be the main character because it seems a little more focused on him. And then like Arnie is kind of the sidekick, which is, it's almost cool the way they do that, because Arnie flips into the main person you're caring about once he goes through this transformation.
Yeah.
But the movie, you know, Dennis has this football injury. And it really kind of flips focus onto Arnie for a lot of the film, until it's like, and it just kind of surrounds itself with like Arnie getting deeper into the car, the people that are trying to continue to pull Arnie apart from the car, things like that. But it's all around him, and he's an antagonist, not a protagonist. And then at the end of the movie, you have these characters like Dennis and Lee, I think. Yeah, you have these characters that are like side characters that have to team up essentially to become the, you know, opposing force to overcome what Arnie has become.
Yeah, did you?
I think it's a really interesting way to do a movie.
Now, did you think it was, now at the end when the car is like trying to go for her, it is like very, like, apparent that car wants to kill her, because, you know, like, it's standing in the way of, you know, the car and Arnie. But, like, do you think that it was just going for her because she was the one on the ground, or do you think it was really just going after her because it was her?
I think that, I mean, both, a little bit of both. I think that it definitely wanted to kill her, but I also think that it knows. Arnie makes these hints multiple times, and this is what I'm saying, like, this dude Keith Gordon sells this performance so good, because again, you put a different actor in that role, him trying to be like the car knows is like corny, but the way that he delivers it is like so mean-spirited and like so distinct.
Mm-hmm.
When he's talking about like the car knows how you feel about it, the car knows you're jealous,
yeah, the,
you
know, car, like, is sensitive,
don't talk to her that way,
yeah, the car is right, sensitive, yep. My car is sensitive, yeah, like
don't talk to the girl, to my girl that way, that kind, mm-hmm, of thing. It's really, really well done. So I think the car knows both Lee and Dennis, and I think it probably would have gone after either of them being on the ground,
yeah,
because it knows that these are the people competing for Arnie's attention, you know. And I love that they crush it with the bulldozer, and then it's playing like, mm-hmm, I will all of you forever, like that, yeah, kind of thing.
And then, like, and then the guy that's coming through the junkyard has it on the radio. Then I was
such
like,
a good, yeah, such a like, good end moment. I like, love nice. That.
It's these little things in films that separate a great film from an okay film. It's these little touches, yeah, these little like nuanced moments where you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna remember that for a while. Just a little extra care.
This, I like this more than I like The Dead Zone. They feel very similar to me, but the thing that distinguishes the two in terms of like adaptations and being films by their respective directors is that we talked about The Dead Zone is very episodic, where it's like feels like three different chapters that are kind of stitched together, whereas this feels a lot more fluid and cohesive, even with Arnie's transformation being so quick. And there are like time jumps, like between Dennis's football injury and when Arnie visits him in the hospital. There are jumps in time, but it feels way more fluid to me and cohesive. Even though I like The Dead Zone, I just think that this movie is really directed well by Carpenter.
Well, The Dead Zone, though, it felt like it was directed by three different people at three different times and put together to make one film. And like, I didn't hate the film. I liked it too, but it's just like, this is so much better than The Dead Zone, even though it does have some similarities and at times it kind of feels like, you know, similar, but this is leaps and bounds better.
It's just much more memorable, I think.
Yeah.
Like the thing that The Dead Zone is missing is something to make it a Cronenberg film instead of just like a movie that's directed by Cronenberg, whereas this does have elements, even though it feels more like a King adaptation. I did say that at the beginning, like this has the elements that set it apart and make it a Carpenter film, from the score to those scenes, those highlight scenes we talked about, to just the imagery and the way it's shot. Yeah. I mean, it's just a movie. I'm so glad you liked it. I'm so glad.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, it's like, it's crazy. This film gets I don't know, like, I'm not going to sit here and say it's the best film that we've seen out of the season. It might be. I think it is. But like, I'd have to like really think about that when we do our rankings at the end. It's definitely going to be, I would be surprised if it falls out of like top three. Like, yeah, as we go, I'd be very surprised to see this fall any lower than maybe the third favorite film of this season.
Yeah, and something I think about too is like, when we give our rankings, I want them to be like, not so much as what we think is like the best, but just what we like and what feels like memorable, what we would want to watch again.
Yeah.
Because if you were to look up like an objective list of like these films ranked, which nobody's ranking five Kubrick and Carpenter films in the same list, but if you were, you would obviously see it like the five Kubrick films at the top. You know, and so I want, when we rank these movies for our listeners, I want people to get kind of a unique take on it, where it's like, these are the ones that really stuck with us.
Well, that's a good thing about the way that we rank films, is we go off of how it made us feel at that time. We don't base it off of like, you know, editing and like the actual like art. I mean, we do like it all, like
it's
we,
how it, it's
like it's we how use it all together. Of that in yeah. our like how we feel, but at the end of the day, like, technically, could a film be better than what we put in our top three? Yeah, but like it didn't make us feel all the same at the end of the day. But also too, on the other hand, a technically poor movie will put it way at the bottom of the list too. So
look at a movie like Vicious Fun when we talk about after the movies. Like, if I was gonna sit there and like nitpick that movie, I'm sure that like any critic that really wanted to could pull things apart that are like, oh, this doesn't make sense, or I didn't like this. But the idea is that you and I watched that movie and just had a great time.
Yeah.
So, and like, that's what matters, that like after the movie, we walked away from that just being like, oh, I had a great time.
Yeah.
And like, I would watch that again, you know, like that's one that sticks with you. So
remember, after all the movies is how well we feel after the movies. So
very clever on our part. We love ourselves here at the show.
Yeah, we sure do.
And we also love our Patreon subs.
We do love our Patreon subs, Aaron. We love them so much that we're going to give them a big old shout out, a big online smooch on the forehead to Dylan Painter, Tyler Buckley, and Jay Irvin. Thank you so much to you wonderful, wonderful people that help us support everything we do at Lomo Media. You just don't support the podcast. You support everything we do, from bloopers to short films. We got it all. And if you're part of that Patreon, you get to see some behind the scenes stuff that I'm currently working on. I got some cool stuff that's going to be hitting the Patreon, probably even spanning from last season. Just some beginning stuff. I'm putting together some blooper reels. I don't really have anything that's called spare time at the moment, but I'm definitely, it's on my list of working on it. So for our Patreon members and for anyone that's interested, I do have some cool Patreon only content that I'm putting together currently that'll just be exclusive to our Patreon. So that'll be exciting.
You can help us get there. Help Jimmy have more spare time. Help him quit his part-time job. his second job, which is what I should say, help him quit that job. And the more people that join the Patreon, the more time we have to put more on the Patreon.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a direct correlation between people joining and more stuff hitting the Patreon. So, you know, there's a tier as low as $3 a month, less than a cup of coffee. You get all kinds of fun stuff for that, including video episodes of this podcast. So you can look at our beautiful mugs while we talk about the movies.
And sometimes you get to see it a day earlier than our audio listeners. Sometimes. But not all the time.
if you can't afford it, which we understand some people can't, what's super helpful is just sharing the podcast or telling a friend if you like the show. Word of mouth is helpful. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, which, according to our metrics, most of you are listening on Apple Podcasts now. There's been a dramatic shift in where people are listening, which is awesome because it gives you guys the opportunity to leave us a review, which is super helpful. And if you do leave us a review, we will read it on the air. So please leave us a review on Apple Music. It is super, super helpful to us, and it helps people find the show. So, and it's free. So, that's what we got going on. And we hope you enjoyed the film. Let us know what you think in the comments. I guess there isn't comments because it's not a video.
Tweet us.
Just on social.
Tweet us. Yeah. Tweet us at Lomo Media. Yes.
We'd like to have some more social engagement. So tweet at us. Let us know what you think. Let us know what your favorite Carpenter film is, your Carpenter ranking, as well as your Stephen King ranking. Let us know, like, what are the best King adaptations? What are the worst ones that you've seen? I know my least favorite, controversially, is The Mist. Maybe a film that we talk about next season when we talk about our most and least hated, our most hated and our most loved.
You don't like The Mist?
I can't tell if this is a bit or not.
Neither do I.
I was like, I feel so. I can sense a disturbance in the force here. Hit us up on social media. Otherwise, tune in Thursday. We're going to be talking about the new Paranormal Activity, which we're about to talk about right now as we record these episodes back to back. So if you enjoyed this episode, we'll see you in a couple of days.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Bye, everyone.